Good afternoon. Illinois Appellate Court, First District Court is now in session. The Sixth Division, the Honorable Justice Sharon Johnson presiding. Case number 22-0547, Stephanie Ipina versus TCC Wireless.
Good afternoon. Let me introduce myself first. I'm Justice Sharon O. Johnson, and I am joined by my colleagues, Justice Michael B. Hyman and Justice Carl A. Walker. Can I have counsels put your appearances on the record, please?
Your Honor, this is Paul Castiglione. I'm going to be arguing for the plaintiff appellants today. I know it says James Bormas on the screen, but it's Paul Castiglione.
Okay. Are you able to change your name there, please?
I'll change it, Justice. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And good afternoon, Your Honor. This is James Rose telephonically for the appellee, TCC Wireless. I apologize for the confusion. I'm having some internet problems and have not been able to log on, but court administrator helped me dial in from this number.
Okay, very good. I'd like to ask opposing counsel if there is any objection to us proceeding without your video being operable, without being able to see you. Do you have any objection to that, Attorney Castiglione?
None at all, Your Honor.
Okay. And what about you, Attorney Rose? Do you mind appearing without your video being operable?
Well, no, I don't want to inconvenience everyone and delay things. I'm prepared to proceed. If it's hard for the court to hear me, though, or difficult in any way, I'd be happy to reschedule if you'd prefer that. I'll come there in person, or I'll find another way, a different day, to get a working computer. I apologize. But I'm prepared to move forward if it's convenient for all of you.
Okay, I can hear you just fine. And it's my understanding that my colleagues also are in agreement with proceeding. Is that correct? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so we will begin. You'll each be given 20 minutes in which to present your argument. The appellant will have an opportunity to give rebuttal. And Attorney Castiglione, how would you like to divide your time?
Your Honor, if I could split it up 15 minutes and five for rebuttal, I'd like to do that.
Okay, very well. You may begin.
Your Honors, thank you. Good afternoon. Your Honors, may it please the court. As I indicated, I'm Paul Castiglione. I'm here for plaintiff appellants. Your Honors, this is a case brought under the Biometric Information Privacy Act, BIPA. And where this all started was in defendant TCC.
We know how it started. So yes. The question is, we're here on the decision on arbitration, correct?
That's correct. Okay. Well, there were two decisions, that one, and we moved for leave to propound discovery, and that was denied.
Okay, that's correct. But the major one is the arbitration.
That's correct.
Okay. And there was the Garcia case where the counsel for both sides were the same, if I'm not mistaken.
Same counsel on both sides, exactly.
And my understanding from both sides is that the plaintiff in this case was a member of that class, but did not receive notice. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but I would note she was also not on the list, the class list that defendants prepared.
Yes, no, I understand. She was a member. My question was, she was a member of the class, but did not receive notice.
Absolutely right.
So therefore, she wasn't part of that settlement, having no notice of the settlement, and there's no contentions otherwise.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's undisputed.
Okay. And I also understand from the briefs, although it's not before us, that there was another case filed in connection with the Garcia matter with regard to this issue of the failure of the class notice to certain members.
What happened, yes, Your Honor, after this was dismissed by the trial court, we did try to go in at that point in Garcia and try to reopen the judgment there. And that was that we filed a motion under Section 214.01 that was denied. Okay. So we tried that. It didn't work.
Okay. Is that case on appeal?
It is not.
Okay. So the only action now is this one.
That's correct. And I would add
just real quick, Mr. Castellone, this is not important, but they how do you reconcile that with they make a statement in their brief that they actually offered her an opportunity to become a part of the class later on and she declined.
Your Honor, that is not correct. That did not happen. In fact, what happened was
You did see that in their brief, correct?
Yes, we dispute that, don't you, Your Honor?
Okay, right, okay. Thank you.
What happened was after the settlement was finished in Garcia, and the Garcia class, by the way, extended from all persons working for defendant TCC Wireless between October 21, 2012 to February 28, 2020. And what happened was after the Garcia settlement was effectuated, IPNA contacted our office and said she was excluded from the Garcia class. And that's at C-147 and C-168 of the record. And quite a few people started to reach out to us. So what happened, Your Honor, is we reached out to defendants and said, look, we need to work this out. And we also, and that gets at C-176, an email in the record saying, in an effort to keep this matter from escalating needlessly, we asked for details about IPNA to find out if this was just a one-off or was this much broader. I would add, eventually, defendants acknowledged that there was over 100, and we don't know exactly how many, people in IPNA's shoes who were excluded. Their explanation for that was it had to do with acquisition of different stores, and they kind of just fell between the cracks, these employees, and were not included on the class list, and hence not in the settlement. Now,
as Justice Hyman said earlier, we kind of know the facts.
All right.
Kind of get to your arguments, because what I really want you to do is sort of walk us through your estoppel argument. Go through the elements and tell us why that applies. And I want to just give counsel a warning that I'm going to ask the same question of the appellee.
Well, with regard to the estoppel argument, Your Honor, in the Garcia case in 2018, there was a motion to compel arbitration there before then. Now retired circuit judge Diane Larson, which Judge Larson denied. And she denied it because of the arbitration exception in Section 12 of the employment agreement, which said for civil actions of a summary nature where the relief sought is predicated on there being no dispute with respect to any fact. But Judge Larson said there's no dispute here about the collection of fingerprints or finger scans. Therefore, that exception applies, and the motion to compel arbitration she denied. Now, we feel that the defendants here, Your Honor, are collaterally stopped from relitigating this in this IPNA class action. And the reason is that just as there is no factual dispute in the record there, there's no factual dispute in the record here. All the defendants did here was they added a declaration from TCC Wireless's chief financial officer, Eric Tarasevich, saying, quote, there are various factual allegations.
We know what the affidavit said. We've read it. It's very short. Okay. But why do you think that affidavit has no effect whatsoever on the estoppel issue?
Your Honor, I think it has no effect because it's conclusory. It doesn't specifically deny. It doesn't say we didn't finger scan IPNA. We didn't finger scan other members of the IPNA class. It doesn't deny that. It just gives a very vague, conclusory denial. It doesn't really mean anything. It's so lacking in specificity. If you know, under like the standards for affidavits under Rule 191, it wouldn't work. That wouldn't be a proper statement in an affidavit. And I think the same thing applies here. I don't think it creates a question of fact.
Did you file a motion to strike the affidavit?
No. Well, what we did was we just responded saying, "Look, this is the motion to compel should be denied because this affidavit doesn't change anything." So we disputed it in response to the motion to compel, and so we feel there was really no difference. So you had the same factual predicate before Judge Larson and Garcia that was before the trial court here.
And but does it matter that there was an affidavit under your reasoning? And I say that because is I understand what you are saying, that Judge Larson, the issue before her was arbitration. That action was both argued by both sides, and the judge ruled on it.
That's right.
And so that issue has been resolved. So resolved? Does it matter whether there's an affidavit here, whether it's conclusory or not?
That's a good point, Your Honor. It may not. But even giving them the benefit of the doubt, saying it somehow changed the issue, I don't think it did, because the affidavit was ineffective. It included a conclusory statement, but that's a very good point. The fact is the issue was resolved. So coming back with, you know, to try to relitigate it goes against the rule, you know, the whole principle of collateral estoppel. You know, there was
but doesn't it also go against the whole idea? I mean, under your theory, I'm just asking.
Right.
If she is indeed a class member, which apparently she is, everybody can see she's a class member that didn't receive notice.
Right.
So she was excluded. But as a class member, she is in the same position as anybody else was in that litigation. I mean,
she should have been. That's right. That's right.
Is that part of your argument?
That's part of my argument as well, Your Honor. I think the issue is identical to the one presented here. There was a final judgment on the merits. Garcia went to it was settled, and there was a final order and judgment entered. And the party against whom estoppel is asserted was TCC Wireless, or the party here. And in fact, so you had the same, you had TCC Wireless as the defendant in Garcia, defendant here. You had the class representative, Edgar Garcia in Garcia. And you had Ipina, who was a member of the Garcia class here. So everything lines up. So collateral estoppel, TCC Wireless should have been collaterally stopped, we believe, from bringing the motion to compel arbitration, right? And it should have been denied. We offered.
But isn't there an issue where Ipina was, worked at a different store that was later acquired by TCC Wireless, and so isn't that an issue that distinguishes it from the Garcia class?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because even if it was acquired, she still fell within the class definition in Garcia, because she was a TCC Wireless employee. So even if there was an acquisition, and we don't doubt that there may be multiple acquisitions, the employees in those acquired stores were members of the Garcia class. They just didn't all participate in the Garcia class settlement. In fact, they were excluded in terms of the class list.
Well, they agree that she should have been a part of the class. They're saying they made a mistake. So that kind of goes to your unclean hands argument, though. But I want you to I think you're pretty much done with the estoppel, because you've given us your reasons, unless you have more to say on that. Did you have more
to
say on that?
I can. No, I don't, Your Honor. I could go on unclean hands, which is our alternative reason why the decision below, you know, the motion should have been denied. And that is.
Now, and I want you to kind of address Justice Johnson's question here, though, because that's okay. Where I think that she's raising, you're arguing they have unclean hands, but Justice right. Johnson is saying that as she states the facts that they came in a different way. They didn't own that company, that business originally. They acquired it, and they were already taking the biometrics at the time that they acquired it.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Unclean hands, the three elements of unclean hands: misconduct that amounts to fraud or bad faith, made toward the moving party, related to the subject matter of litigation. And what we had below was we raised that as a defense to a motion to compel arbitration, saying, look, this motion to compel arbitration is injunctive in nature. And we, as the non-moving party, felt we were entitled to bring up unclean hands. The problem with the decision below was a motion to compel arbitration, the granting of it, is essentially like granting a 2619 motion to dismiss. We say there was a question of fact. Now, I know about the acquisition, and I know, understand TCC's, Firehouse's argument, hey, this was inadvertent, this was a mistake, and maybe that's so. But we don't know at this point. We're at the pleading stage. Well, and this goes to our motion, which was denied, which was to propound discovery. We wanted to propound discovery to find out two things, really, Your Honor. One, why weren't Ipina and the members of the Ipina class included within the class settlement in Garcia, number one? And number two,
but you know that answer already. You already know that answer. It was a mistake.
Well, we don't know that. That's their position. We haven't been able to do discovery to find out was it something more than a mistake.
Okay.
And they really never came clean on that. And I think that's our position as well. You know, what we would do discovery, and we would say, we think we should win on collateral estoppel anyway, Judge. But additionally, we think we should have been able to do discovery. We would like to do discovery to find out how many different people standing in Ipina's shoes are out there, and find out whether in fact there was good faith or bad faith here.
So if you conduct discovery and you find that there was some other reason as to why Ipina was not included in the Garcia class, then doesn't that defeat your collateral estoppel argument?
Well, I don't think so, Judge. I think the, Your Honor, Justice, I should say. I don't think so because, you know, the we met all the elements for collateral estoppel. There's a final judgment. This was litigated, the same parties. If we find out there was bad faith in terms of exclusion, that would just only go, it would mean a couple of things. It would mean that they, on the basis of unclean hands as well.
But I'm saying not if you find that there was bad faith, but if you find that there was some other legitimate reason as to why they were not included.
No, I don't know. Okay, I understand. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't understand your question. No, I don't think that would affect collateral estoppel because that just goes to the issue that Judge Larson dealt with in the trial court in Garcia. Was it appropriate? Was there a question of fact that took this outside the exemption for the arbitration exemption? Judge Larson found no, there was no question of fact. And there isn't one here either. So even either event, whatever we would find on discovery, collateral estoppel would still apply here, Your Honor. And the decision should be reversed on that basis, we would argue.
I have one more question. With regard to the Ipina complaint and the Garcia complaint, other than the change in plaintiffs and a little discussion about the Garcia case in your complaint, but the claim itself and the arbitration agreement itself is identical. I mean, these cases are mirror images.
Absolutely, Judge. They very much are. And, you know, we only filed the Ipina class claim in the first place. During negotiations, we'd asked for a tolling agreement so we could continue to investigate what happened to Ipina and others like her. And defendants weren't willing to do that. And that's why we ultimately filed the class action. You know, at the time, case law was not clear on what the statute of limitations on BIPA was. McDonald would not be decided for 2 more years, where it said it was 5 years. We didn't know that in the spring of 2021. So absolutely, Judge. And that's why we filed the complaint. We feel there's a good faith basis. We feel the motion to compel arbitration should not have been granted. So for these reasons, Your Honor, we would ask that the decision below be reversed in its entirety. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, unless the court has any other questions.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Attorney Rose?
Thank you. Your Honors, I think I'll probably just jump right into the collateral estoppel issue since that was the focus of your questions. And the very first prong is the one that's not satisfied. This issue is not identical. And here's the real important point. In the 2017 case, Judge Larson did not rule that the arbitration provision was unenforceable. It's not like the Garcia plaintiffs argued and she ruled that it was unconscionable or that they didn't sign it or that they didn't have capacity at the time it was agreed. She ruled that the reason the exception applied in that particular unique case is because TCC Wireless didn't properly support its motion under 2619 with evidence or an affidavit. That circumstance doesn't apply here. You don't even need to go as far as you were, Justice, into the details about the acquisition of the additional store, although that would be a factual distinction that would come up if this case were ever litigated or arbitrated.
Go ahead.
Counsel, can you give us a case? Yeah. Give us a case where the court says that the reasoning with regard to the ruling is the basis for denying collateral estoppel. You're saying the reasoning and the fact that there's before we even get to whether the affidavit is something that can be considered or not, knowing what counsel's argument was. I want to know, you know, I haven't seen cases, quite frankly, and again, cite me Illinois law that says, yeah, if the judge ruled on reason A and the judge can rule on reason B, then there's no collateral estoppel.
Well, I think the cases are all of the collateral estoppel cases, Your Honor, that say the issues have to be identical. That's the part
the issue is identical. The issue is arbitration or no arbitration. Isn't that was the motion, wasn't it?
That was the motion, yep. But the reason for the court's ruling was not identical. The issue is not identical.
Yes, and that's exactly my question. So answer my question. The reasoning was different. So what? Give me a case in Illinois that says that you look at the reason that the judge ruled. And that's a part of a collateral estoppel test.
I do think that, for example, the Hurlburt case that I cite on page 27 of my brief, it doesn't use your words, Your Honor. It doesn't say that we look at the reasoning, but I think that's inherent in the first prong. I think that's the only thing that the first prong can mean, is that the prior adjudication must be identical as the one presented in the first lawsuit.
No case says that. You concede that no case says that. And to use some broad language that you cite on page 27, I'm looking at it now, the issue decided in the prior adjudication is identical. It's the issue is identical. The issue is identical. You're saying the reasoning. How is that in there at all in Herbler?
Well, I think if the final judgment in that case had said, this provision is unenforceable, no party can ever compel arbitration under this provision, that would have preclusive effect. But that's not what happened in that case. That's not what the judge ruled.
Of course not, because that's not the way the courts operate, do we? We can't say that. No court could make such a...
Well, sure they do.
No, the case...
Sure they do, Your Honor.
No, that's not how collateral estoppel works. We only have the case that's before us. We're not ruling on cases that aren't before us, because the difference in this case, I'm just proposing this to you, but what you're saying is that you can see, do you not, that she was a member of the class and did not receive notice, correct?
Yes, correct.
So she should have received notice. There's no question about that. And her claim is identical, I assume you would have conceded. Her claim is identical. So is that correct?
I don't think it is identical.
What's different about the claim in Ipina and the claim in Garcia?
The fact that she wasn't onboarded in the way the other class members were. The fact that her store was...
Wait a minute. I hate to interrupt you, but, and I'm sorry I interrupt you, but not seeing you makes it tougher to, because you can't see me either. So I apologize.
Understood, Your Honor.
And you can interrupt me. Don't you know, because we're doing this by phone, it's, for all of us, I think this is kind of unique. But that's not true, because you say that she was a member of the class, okay? She should have had notice, and that's conceded. She should have had notice, and we wouldn't be here. Okay, she didn't for whatever reason, okay? And that's not what we're here for. So I'm trying to understand. So there is no difference. She would have been a member of that putative class, which was later certified and was settled. And the issue...
That part is true.
Okay. And the issue that was decided in the case had to do with whether the arbitration agreement applied to all these putative class members. And Judge Larson said it did. And for whatever reason, defendants did not provide an affidavit. But it doesn't really matter, because no case says that we look at the reason why the motion was granted or denied. We look at whether the motion was granted or denied.
No, I really don't agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, give me law in Illinois that supports your position.
The best I can do is the collateral estoppel case that I just pointed out. Have a disagreement about what that means. Can I give you an example, Your Honor?
Absolutely.
The scenario that you're outlining, if one of the class members had said, wait a minute, we didn't sign that arbitration agreement, or that, where you usually see this in a collateral estoppel situation, is where somebody says that arbitration provision is unconscionable. It's procedurally or substantively unconscionable, and we shouldn't have to arbitrate for that reason. And a court looks at it and says, you know what? You're right. I'm not going to send these parties to arbitration. Or somebody says, that's a narrow arbitration provision. That only covers, for example, harassment claims or termination claims in the employment contract and the employment context. And for that reason, I'm not going to compel these people to arbitrate. That's a legal ruling, a final legal ruling that would have preclusive effect. That's, I would say, fundamentally different than what happened here. Saying that the moving party didn't properly support its motion as a procedural matter under 2619 is very different than making a legal ruling as to the enforceability of the provision, and it does not have preclusive effect.
Okay, well, Mr. Rose, that was the initial point that you made, and you were asked the question why this case was different, and you said it was different because of an affidavit, and I think that's where your stronger argument is. But just a second ago, when Justice Hyman asked you a question, you said that this case is different because her company was acquired. So you may want, I'm not sure that that makes it any different, and I'm not even going to ask you to argue that because I'm not even sure that that takes you anywhere that's helpful to you. But I want to come back to, what about this affidavit that makes the case different? You're saying it's different just because an affidavit was filed. I want to know what's stated in the affidavit that makes it different.
Sure, I'll answer that question. That also helps explain my prior reference to the after-acquired store. So the basis for Judge Larson's ruling is, she said, the absence of the affidavit proves that there is no dispute of any fact, and this is just a summary proceeding, and we can rubber stamp it, and so there's no reason to go through an arbitration. The affidavit in this case says the facts alleged in the complaint are disputed. There is evidence saying it's in dispute. So you would have to have a proceeding in arbitration. You would have to have a fight about whether BIPA was violated, about whether she was fingerprinted, which is disputed, about whether there was a policy in place at the time this happened, which is disputed.
But why wouldn't those facts be indicated in the affidavit such that the trial court would have access to that in making its decision?
That's a great question, Your Honor. There is a good reason for that, because if the court thinks that we are making substantive arguments, there's Illinois law that says that could be considered a waiver of our right to arbitrate. So you have to walk a very fine line. And the reason we have to do that is because of the strange ruling that Judge Larson made in the first place, saying that you have to submit some sort of affidavit, and that's why there wasn't a legal ruling in the first place. But we're trying to walk that line the second time around. We're providing substantive evidence and an affidavit, which we've been told is necessary, but we can't go too far down that road and offer up a substantive defense or start fighting the case on its substance, because then we're in danger of a court saying, wait a minute, you've waived your right to arbitrate. If you start making substantive arguments, you're participating in this proceeding.
But the problem, though, is that with what you've alleged, this case is no different from the Garcia case. There appears to be no factual issues based on what you've alleged. You're just simply saying, yeah, there's factual issues, but you were not detailed in what those issues are, because now what you're stating is the exact same thing that was in the Garcia case. That's what you're telling us now. And you've already admitted that she was a part of the class, or at least should have been a part of the class in the Garcia case.
She should have been a part of the class. She should have been able to participate in that settlement. We offered her that settlement. She rejected it. So why is she any worse off? She has the rights that she had. She has her contract rights. She can bring a claim in arbitration. She just promised that if she ever does that, she'd file an arbitration, not in circuit court.
I want you to finish your point, but you said something along the way there. Earlier, Mr. Castiglione said that's not correct. So do you want to just argue that a bit? Because he seems to disagree with you that you guys offered her to be a part of the class and she declined. He says that never happened.
I suspect that's a bit of semantics. I mean, what we told her when she came to us is, look, this is something that really should be addressed in the context of the Garcia case. If you think you were excluded from that case and you should have received notice and that class needs to be modified, you need to go back to that case and make that argument there.
What do you mean by if she thinks? You've already said that she should have been a part of the class. So just stay with us so that things make sense. Because when things start not to make sense, you make it real difficult for us to follow you.
Apologies, Your Honor. I'm trying to recreate the dialogue that happened initially before we had ascertained that, in fact, she should have received notice. And part of this dialogue is
And you agree, though, right? I don't mean to interrupt you, Mr. Rose, but it's just that you agree she should have received notice. You agree that she should have been a part of the class, but you keep using these terms as if you're not sure that you agree with that.
No, we agree that she should have received notice and she was entitled to be part of the class. Okay. Once we determined that, we offered her the exact same settlement that the rest of the class had. Appellant's counsel is saying is that we didn't offer to make her a member of the class. We couldn't do that in the context of this lawsuit that she filed against us in the IPNA lawsuit. That's something that could happen in the context of the 2017 lawsuit, the Garcia lawsuit, but we absolutely made her the exact same offer that she would have received had she been a member of the Garcia class.
But it doesn't make sense then. If that is true, then why didn't you just consent to allow the absent class members who should have been a party to be made parties and receive notice and receive the settlement in Garcia instead of contesting Garcia, which you did, and the judge ruled in your favor, apparently, from what I understand. So you're saying, oh, you should have gone to Garcia. They did go to Garcia. You objected to Garcia. You wanted both ways. So now they did the only thing they can do is file and pursue this independent case on behalf of all these people who are in the same position as her. This is a class action.
No.
Why?
No. Respectfully, Your Honor, you've got the chronology wrong, with all due respect. She didn't go back to Garcia and ask to be made a part of that class. Instead, she sued us in circuit court, which she knew she didn't have permission to do, fought tooth and nail to have a class certified, another right that she waived, only after she lost on the eve of the 2-year deadline did she go back to Garcia and say, well, I tried to file my own class action and it didn't work. So now I'm here to assert my rights that I've known about for the last year. Why the Garcia judge said, this was not diligence. I'm not going to allow you to do it after the fact. It looks like you've been forum shopping and that's not appropriate. If you had a right to come back here, you should have done it immediately.
Well, wait a minute. I'm confused. Is there a third case or are you talking about this case?
No, I'm talking, there's only two cases.
Okay. So you're saying that they still had time in the statute of limitations, and so they filed a separate case. And so you could have still resolved it by going back to Garcia. You instead litigated this separately. I mean, you make it as if it's the fault of the plaintiff when, even by your own terms, you say it was a mistake by the defendant. Yet the defendant doesn't want to correct it, apparently, because you didn't want to have Garcia be it seems to me that you would have gone right to the Garcia court and said, hey, we got to fix this up. Instead, you litigate for 2 years. Then, as I understand, you refuse to give a tolling agreement. And so they pursue this. Again, it sounds like you're just trying to keep these 100, whatever number there are, from getting the same relief they should have gotten. And class counsel is doing what they have to do to protect members of the class who they have been assigned to represent and whose fault of not getting the notice was not theirs under any circumstances, it was yours. So I'm trying to understand why we're here.
Okay, and Attorney Rose, if you can just respond very briefly, your time has expired, but I'd like to give you an opportunity to address Justice Hyman's comments. And then it appeared that Justice Walker may have had another one final question. Okay.
Very well. The response I'll give to that is that I'm not trying to attack counsel here, but Your Honor, respectfully, I disagree with that assertion that counsel in filing this new lawsuit is doing what he had to do in order to protect the Garcia class. The Garcia class could have been amended in the Garcia case. That's why the Garcia judge said you weren't diligent in coming back here to make sure everyone's rights were protected. Instead, because they didn't like the result of the Garcia case, because they didn't feel they got a good enough settlement there, they tried to start a separate class action and avoid the clear language of the arbitration agreement. There's no dispute that this claim is subject to that arbitration agreement. And that's the very limited thing. That's the only issue that the circuit court in this case ruled. And that's why it was appropriate to dismiss this case.
Right. Just so I will come back. I wasn't going to ask my question, but it comes back to what Justice Hyman was asking you. But after they lost in this case, they went back to the circuit court and you basically defended and the circuit court ruled in your favor. Is that correct?
Correct. Because okay.
Go ahead. I'll let you explain. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You can explain. Go ahead.
The answer is yes, Your Honor. That you're correct.
Chronologically, it needs any explanation. It's a yes. Because if you start explaining, I think it just it's like you're saying you're behind. You're digging a hole. Because it's a yes answer. And then the other thing is, and I just want to make sure that this is just not a mistake, and that you just don't quite remember. But I read in the record that you all already admitted that there were 238 employees left out. And you keep using this term 100 employees left out. And that's twice that number. So I just don't want it to appear deceptive that you're just making a mistake, right? You do agree there were 238, correct?
I don't think there's anything in either record that identifies the number, Your Honor. There's nothing in my brief that talks about either number. I think the plaintiff has alleged
the briefs are not the record. The briefs are not the record, but that's fine. If you don't recall, it's okay. I mean, that happens. We all forget.
Okay. Thank you very much. Attorney Castiglione, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, thank you. I'll try to be as brief as possible. You know, it turns out in this case, in the record in this case, the discussions after we learned about IPNA are at C-176 and C-177 of the record. And I think it makes it quite clear we were trying to work this out, which is the normal course of practice in a class action. If any number of members slip between the cracks, and Justice Walker is right, it could be several hundred. We have no idea. That's one of the reasons we wanted discovery. But we tried to work it out. We couldn't. We couldn't get a tolling agreement. We filed the IPNA class action. We didn't know what else we could do to protect the absentee members of the class, the Garcia class, who didn't participate. So that's why we did.
One final time, can you respond to counsel's assertion that they did offer your client the same settlement as what was offered in Garcia?
They did not. We tried to work it out for IPNA and anyone else. We wanted to see what was important to us, Your Honors. How did IPNA get excluded? Because we thought that would give some explanation as to who else might have been excluded and why. And we wanted to protect all of them. But no, there was no settlement offer. We tried to work the whole thing out. We couldn't. And that's, like I say, why we ended up filing the class.
Get the timing right. From what counsel said, it sounded like, from what they said, that you filed this action without going back to Garcia. And then Garcia was an afterthought. That's how they seem to explain it. What am I getting?
I'd be glad to, Your Honor. No, it was not an afterthought. We filed IPNA in May of 21. At that point, we didn't know what the statute of limitation was. We had concerns about the absentee Garcia members who didn't participate. The clock was rolling on them. After that settlement agreement, which was in 20, clock was rolling. And we might have been looking at a one-year statute of limitations in total back then. So we know now from McDonald that it was 5 years, but we didn't know it then. So taking everything into account, we thought we have to go this route. We have to go the filing of the new class route. Claims were within the statute under any reading of the statute. So we felt that was the safest way to go for the absentee class members. So that's why we did that. Yes, we did eventually go in Garcia and try to open it up thinking, well, all right, this didn't work. We're going to appeal this. In the meantime, if we could get some relief from the trial judge in Garcia under a 214-01 motion, all the better if that would work. Well, that didn't work either, which left this. We were concerned that we needed to do this initially as a class action in IPNA to protect the rights of IPNA and the class members. And as it turns out, this was the only avenue we have, and we had and currently still have. Beyond that, if your honors don't have any other questions, the only thing I would add in terms of a public policy issue with this case, how this case is resolved, is that affirming the decision below would could encourage gamesmanship and create a playbook for sloppy or even unscrupulous class action defendants to game the class-wide settlement process. Clearly, that's not how class actions are supposed to proceed. It's not we're not good for plaintiffs who join it who are in a class action, and affirmance here would be a rich reward for a defendant who acted incorrectly, if not improperly, and an injustice to the plaintiff, and it would cause an injustice to the plaintiff, IPNA, and the putative class that the court is obliged to protect. So, for all those reasons, Your Honor, we would ask that the decision of a trial court below be reversed in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to thank both counsels for your arguments today. They were very well-versed in the facts as well as the relevant law, and have given us quite a bit to consider when making our decision regarding this case. So thank you very much for your excellent presentations, and that concludes this matter.
Thank you.